Welcome to Real Flicks Reviews, like a book club for people who hate reading. This month they're doing grab bags, so James picked the movie Candyman, made in 1992. We bring you movie news, and this week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, and Ryan Preston. Candyman 1992. In the description, another IMDb semi-classic. The Candyman, a murderous soul with a hook for a hand, is accidentally summoned to reality by a skeptic grad student researching the monster's myth.
He's not technically a monster.
Yeah, no, and he's not technically a spirit either. First he's tangible, then he's intangible. I couldn't put my finger on the rules for this particular specter.
On the other hand, they didn't really follow kind of the horror movie, you know, stereotype, a chick in high heels running upstairs or...
Well, I was going to mention in a minute, I mean, dude, Virginia Madsen is way better of an actress than you would expect to see in a movie like this.
Yeah, definitely.
I gotta tell everybody, like, I kind of watched this off of something looked like a VHS tape from the 80s, so it wasn't the best quality in the world.
That's about the only quality you're going to get these days of this one.
I'm not a big fan of horror movies, never really have been. But the best thing that this movie had going for it was the feeling of it. Was the look of this movie was gritty enough that it added...
And the piano solo.
The constant piano solo. Added ambiance, I think, to the story.
I think you're absolutely right. The one thing this movie really nailed was like the atmosphere. And kind of from beginning to end, usually with a horror movie, you have some really lighthearted beginning. So it's much more of a sharp drop when you get to somebody being massacred, you know?
And it didn't change all that much. It was the same tone throughout the movie.
Really, really kept the tone. And due to the score and the kind of general atmosphere, and then much better actors, Xander Berkeley.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Tony Todd is such an imposing guy in the first place.
Dude, he's a great actor. He always has.
Yeah, much, much better than people kind of give him credit for. He's the guy kind of disappears into that sort of bad guy role real good.
Well, he's just, I mean, his talent to being a character actor.
Yeah, but I mean, that score, I mean, especially like the gothic, you know, like old school gothic chamber type of music, you know, was really, really good.
I would say the one scene to me that kind of really added, that really, I think, enhanced the overall story was the scene when she found out her apartment complex was supposed to be...
ghetto?
Government housing. When she started explaining what they did and, you know, how the medicine cabinets weren't really attached. And that whole part, when I was watching it, you just like, this is the scene that really just adds an extra layer to it.
It had a couple of those moments where it was sort of surprising how much they kind of went into this story a little more deep than you thought they would, and more deep than you really need to in a what's all in all a slasher movie.
Yeah.
See, I don't know if I would call this straight slasher. I mean, I think
it is. It devolves entirely into a slasher movie about an hour and 10 minutes.
Like, the end of the movie is definitely, slasher. But I would say this would be more, a little bit more thriller, a little bit more psychological, and then the end totally just devolves into torture porn a little bit.
Yeah, it's
a kind of a storyline that we've seen in a couple of different ways where, you know, somebody involved in some skeptic way of an urban legend comes to find out it's not quite such a legend, you know. But this one really teetered on the, is he just a guy out there killing people, or is he an actual sort of thing? And they left me hanging on that for like the first half of the movie.
I enjoyed is that in that one section where she shows up at the college and she comes in and he's lecturing her husband or fiance or whatever, is lecturing, and he kind of does the urban legends speech.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, it's kind of like a mix of that. I enjoyed that aspect about this film is because that's what a lot of, thoughts on urban legends is kind of coming from is, you know, you always have somebody who knows something about this.
Yeah.
You know, at the time in the 90s, I remember as a kid, there was a lot of those legends kind of being brought up at that time of, you know, Bloody Mary was kind of big at that time, and you had the Ouija board.
And I would say, I think you're right. I think that's one of the reasons why this movie plays so well, even today, is it plays on a commonly shared mythos.
Yeah.
That it still tugs at your soul, even as an adult. You're like, oh, that's BS.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, how many times even as adults can you kind of creep yourself out, you know, just by sort of overthinking some old story or something?
Every time I think of the IRS.
wake up in a cold sweat.
Exactly.
But, you know, I enjoyed the relationship between her and her boy guy that was cheating on her is because...
Xander Berkeley?
Yeah. Well, I couldn't remember his actual act. The character's name right now.
Trevor Lyle.
There you go. Anyways, but I kind of like that because you're saying, you know, he has the intellectual aspect of everything on it, and he's just kind of throwing it all to the wind and allowing her to run around and kind of do her thesis is what she was working for. And that kind of kept her in the thing of like, is this real? Is this fake? You know, type thing. Right. I kind of enjoyed that.
And, you know, I think my favorite thing about this movie, which I'm not going to sit here and pretend like it's a wonderful piece of cinema. It's actually a pretty good story for a horror movie.
I'd say it's a Razzie Award winner.
I think it actually got pretty decent reviews.
It got 5 wins and 7 nominations.
I mean, that's actually pretty good for a horror movie, actually.
But aside from just your standard kind of horror movie stuff, which most horror movie fans, they're just into sort of the horror aspects.
Yeah.
The real life sort of court scene, the involvement of the psychiatric unit, that sort of thing. I hate in horror movies when you have this isolated group of people, the camp kids for Friday the 13th, or, you know, you're in a house and you're being murdered by Michael Myers, but there's just no cops in the town or nobody.
Village.
You know, so whereas in real life, everybody'd be on their radios, there'd be 100 cops there in 10 seconds, helicopters and news coverage. So the way that they actually went into that and kind of made you think like, wow, man, is this chick just out of her mind murdering people? Yeah. You know,
it definitely did add layers to a movie that realistically had really a very basic plot.
Yeah.
I think another scene...
I felt really bad for her court case after that second one with the dog's head with the her friend in the house. I'm like, oh man, you're not gonna get away from that one. I'm gonna lock you up.
I think. And by the way, the cops that what was it? Detained that black mom. They would have gotten slashed open.
I think she
could do the classic thing of picking up the knife and you know, it's like, okay, you got to recognize you're in a crime scene, folks.
I think
'90s, whatever.
There wasn't CSI back then. I think the other scene that added
there's
some
Jerry
more,
Springer.
But they were used to chalk line, you know, outlining people with chalk lines.
That's true.
I think the other scene that really added layers was the scene with the little kid with the bees in the toilet scene.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. That is like my favorite scene. You know,
there's so
found
many...
that thing floating in a toilet. He just bet off. Dead.
You know, I keep thinking of the scenes that I thought added like layers. There's little tidbits in this movie that just add so much, and that's why I think the ending of this movie was kind of anticlimactic the way it happened. It's like you have such an amazing buildup, and the dude kind of burns to death. All of a sudden, you know, he's backdraft.
Like, one of those, like, I'm still trying to figure out the rules. Like this guy disappearing under a bed and not even on the camera and whatnot, but fire.
Yeah.
You know, didn't fire just stab him with a meat hook with fire.
And then somehow it was real enough for that kid to throw the meat hook in her grave.
Right, exactly.
And I kind of understand the basic story about it, that everybody's fear brought him alive, blah, 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 blah. But it just, there's some real, not loopholes, but things that don't connect in this story. And they're pretty large.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's a stretch, and it's obviously weird to say that about a thing. But you know, you watch a movie, and you're involved in this universe that this filmmaker's created, and things track or things don't. You know what I mean? Just like in real life, like if you were to see magic all of a sudden, you'd be like, "Wait a second, that's bizarre."
Yeah,
doesn't happen in real life.
And I think it's enough for me in some scenes that kind of like it takes you out of it, going, wait a minute, the scene ago he said this, but now this happens, but then it goes this earlier. Oh, it's just, it's
well,
just
that
like,
could be why they had five Candymans all together. Yeah, but
trying,
you know,
to cover up
the,
all the holes.
The issue, what you guys are bringing up, is to hide all those plot holes in a horror film at this time, with the movies that were coming out. If you actually paid attention to the runtime of most of these films, is they had a 90-minute runtime that they were always trying to fit the story in, and it was pretty much like a rule of thumb with horror films that you don't really go over 90 minutes. I mean, Kevin Costner ruined that, not really doing horror films, but, you know, just films in general. But
Dances
if you look
with Wolves,
at most of the horror
you.
Films from the, I would say, 83 up until, what, 98, 99, most of the horror films kind of stayed to a 90-minute runtime.
See, I actually, I
so
like
they did sequels to cover up the plot holes.
See, I like the 90-minute runtime on some movies because it gives you enough time to tell a great story without ruining it. I don't think you could have this movie any longer, because if it did, it
you'd fall asleep.
Well, not only that, I think it would ruin the story. I mean, the plot's already 3-2 beer thin. I think if you made it any longer, it would literally be a horrible movie, even worse than it is.
Yeah,
I think it's, I mean, it's not going to, you know, win any technical achievements or anything that. It didn't really break any new ground with filmmaking style or anything like that. It did manage to kind of keep the creepy going. I mean, points for that.
Yeah,
and I think the, what was it, Tower Green or whatever the
newest one?
No. What that place was called where she found...
No, I know what you're talking about. I don't know the name of it.
The public housing.
Yeah.
I was thinking the other part that added to the story was they were in a group of fellow academics, and he was telling the story behind the Candyman. And then she goes into the building that was on top of where he was killed.
Yeah, the area.
Yeah.
And, you know, she finds the hook through the mirror, and just it adds so much. I think this movie, like we said in the beginning, is all about atmosphere, because there's no story to this movie.
Well, I like the when she crawls into that area that doing her little research
through
the bathtub and everything like that. She crawls through the bath mirror hole, you know, and goes in there. And that area inside of there, I always thought was really cool, especially the artwork in where he's like screaming. And that was one of the things I enjoyed about this film, is they did a lot of background work, you know.
The
set designs and things like that that were really cool for what they were.
Now to mention it, I just kind of thought about it. They never redid that room. So it was something storyline-wise that everybody in that building was so scared of that particular spot that they just left it alone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a little slow in the uptake, but...
Yeah, and then there's a couple things written in there, like suites for the suite, you know, type thing, that they really didn't cover or really go into any detail, really, in this film.
Right, in this one.
But was always like they covered things that they didn't in the first one or the second one in the next film. I think there was a total of five, Ryan. Is there a five?
I think the last one's
bad, at least
flesh.
Three. I want to say
I know three, four. But I think there was five total.
I think you might be right. I'd have to look it up, but
I've seen them all, but this one for me was always the one that I enjoyed. Kind of like the jokes that were in there. There's a lot of humor in this film that you would kind of not get if you really weren't, you know, kind of looking forward or taking this film too seriously.
Now, do you think you liked this one because this one's an empty slate? Like you had no context to it.
And
the second,
which
third,
the way they were trying to tell the story with the court case was perfect for it. You know,
because on the second and third and fourth, they already have a foundation, a groundwork that they can't really skate out of without a really good story or reason why.
Right, but I mean, well, they at least have sort of an expectation. I mean, you know, Clive Barker, if nothing else, you know, can create, you know, a good couple of kind of iconic characters. And it's sort of weird how Candyman's kind of stuck with everybody. You know, I mean, I guarantee you 30, 40 years from now, when people really forget that this was a movie, it's just going to be The Legend of Candyman, and people don't want to say it in the mirror.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Three, four. Well, there's four, and they're...
What was the latest one?
It was, no, I might be wrong. I think there's, let's see, one, two, three. Actually, I think there's only three. I think you're right, Ryan. There's only three. There's the Candyman, and then there's Candyman Farewell to the Flesh and Candyman Day of the Dead.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't remember anything.
And I'm only going with the ones that have Tony Todd.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a reboot in the works.
Yeah, there was a one that I guess came out in 2013. Oh, but maybe that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah, they might have...
This one's a different one, though. It's not off the Candyman legend. Anyways, but I think you're kind of right, John, in the empty slate type thing. I think what they were doing is they were doing the horror thing and leaving openings for them to continue the story in the next one. I mean, you had like a bunch of critters, you had leprechauns, you had child's plays, you had all these things coming out that were, you know, sequel after sequel after sequel. I think that's kind of what they were looking to do in this one.
And I completely agree. Sorry, that's kind of a separate thought, but okay. I realized what kind of bugged me about this, and I kind of said it already. I think this movie would have been so much better. I think I would have given a better rating if they didn't show the Candyman burn. Because this movie does something that most horror movies don't do well on, is letting it play to your own fears.
Yeah.
If you leave it vague enough, your mind will make up everything.
Yeah.
So for me, and I'm not a big fan of horror movies, this is a 3 out of 5 because the atmosphere in this movie is, in a lot of ways, unparalleled.
Yeah.
Not a lot of movies I've seen that build the feeling that this movie does.
Yeah, I pretty much absolutely agree with you. Between the atmosphere and then just like a kind of above average performance between Virginia Madsen and Tony Todd. Yeah, 3 out of 5 for sure.
Yeah. Those two main characters definitely carried this movie. Because honestly, all the other characters, where they weren't ancillary, they were really poorly acted.
Well, I think the end scene between her fiance or whatever and his newest fad, the girl, the young college girl. I think that last scene at the end where he's sitting in the bathroom and she's up making her dinner.
Scene.
Yeah, she's throwing her little fit and he's in the bathroom, you know, missing his girl and everything. And then he does the Candyman to himself. I thought that was a really good scene between the acting of those two. I think that was the best scene of the college girl acting because she didn't have much.
Okay, yeah, performance, but as far as the scene, man, they could have definitely done without that shit for the end of the movie.
Yeah, I agree. They could have done without it, but I think that scene was the best act between those two characters.
The accidental Helen 5 times in the friggin' mirror. Good Lord.
Yeah.
So what do you give this?
Oh, Helen. You're gonna be shitting me.
I agree with you guys. I think this is a 3 out of 5. It's not a strong horror film, but I think as far as like one of the ones that came out of this era, I think this was one of the better ones out of them.
Oh no,
that was strictly horror of it.
Oh totally. Because
it was more serious horror than comedy horror of Critters, Leprechaun, even parts of Child's Play.
Oh, Child's Play is freaking hilarious.
I love Child's Play.
Yeah. Funny movie.
This movie just has atmosphere. This is in my opinion, at least from the honestly the limited number of horror movies, but the millions of movies I've watched, this movie has amazing atmosphere. Yeah. I mean, if I ever watch it again, it's just for the fact this movie's atmosphere. And I guess what I mean by that is it adds enough spook factor to it that you're just on the edge a little bit, even though it's kind of a boring 90-minute movie.
Yeah, but the thing that I appreciated about this one is there's only like one or two scenes that have the audience jump scenes where they're trying to make you jump.
Yes.
And I hate the fact that the later 90s up until still today, horror films they're overplaying that too much.
They want you to
shock
jump.
Value, whereas this one, I mean, it's a slow drip of creepy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's an art, dude. I mean, it's not an easy thing to do.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah. And then, so we're going to switch to our TV pick for the week. And
yeah, that was Kings and Prophets. And this one is basically a storytelling of 1st and 2nd Samuel and 1st and 2nd Chronicles. Is they're trying to tell the story of Saul into King David type run.
It's not a new idea doing this.
It's not.
However, this is new, I think, in this modern age of semi-secularism. And
well, I was kind of surprised that this is a network. It's NBC. NBC.
So it's an Alphabet channel.
It's a network putting this out, and it's intriguing enough to me to check out a couple more episodes, but I don't think they were as aggressive as the actual stories in the Bible. They kind of took a little bit of liberty and kind of smoothed out how I would say gritty some of the stories were. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. There are definitely some liberties in here.
Quite more than I was expecting.
Wait, more or less than Noah?
I never saw Noah.
Are you talking about the movie?
Yeah.
The one with
Russell
Crowe. Russell Crowe. I had no interest in watching that one. I didn't.
Oh, man, it's terrible.
What I kept on hearing from so many people. So this one, I actually kind of, there's enough intrigue in it for me to watch, but it's slow and it's... And they're doing too much filler what I would say. They're taking liberties, as you were saying, in the day to day kind of life.
Because what it is in the Bible, they give like an arch overview, as it were. What they're trying to do is trying to do a movie or a TV series. They have to fill in gaps that aren't given in the actual story.
Yeah.
And so,
like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so there's definitely parts in that you're thinking, that would never happen.
Or that's unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing glaring like having like Saul eat a giant piece of pork, but there's enough
I'm
little...
I wonder if they're going to do the one where Saul tells David to go and get, foreskins for him. I wonder if they're going to do that scene.
If it was an AMC, it totally would.
I mean, come on.
But I was actually pretty impressed. I wasn't expecting kind of the visual tone they take with this. Because this is a dark, dark TV show.
Yeah.
Even the daylight scenes are dark.
yeah. And I understand what they're trying to portray with that, but I think, like I say, there's a few things that are quite unnecessary. I don't see this one being on for very long.
Oh, no.
To be honest.
Actually, one of the parts that kind of, I'm intrigued enough to like you to maybe watch the next episode is what they did with Samuel.
Yeah, and he's a nicer guy than the Bible says.
Yeah.
He was a cranky old man.
That's an understatement.
Anyways, so, that was a little bit, like I said with the show, it's not for everybody. It's one of those that it's kind of, I think they're pushing the drama aspect a little too much.
I think that's kind of the new era in television. I think the last 5, maybe 10 years is most TV shows are now very over dramatic. I think Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, no.
Even S.H.I.E.L.D. a little bit. I think S.H.I.E.L.D. was kind of the starting where you start having like more drama that I think is necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
That being said, we do have a Facebook page. You love us, hate us, write us. But just be more creative than You Suck or The Fat Guy's an Asshole. Come on. You guys are internet. Be creative.
That's gone away.
And so this week is James' pick for movie news. And so, you're up.
We're going to keep going with Clive Barker. He was one of the writers for Candyman. And he's also rebooting, it looks like, Hellraiser. They're not really going to be continuing with, where is he? Jeez, there we go. Sorry. I was trying to bring up a actor's name. Doug Bradley is not supposedly billed for this Hellraiser, which he's the original Pinhead.
Yeah, they'd have to go with
him. I liked him. He was really creepy.
Oh, I think the first movie, and believe it or not, this is one I've actually seen, was the first couple of them, is...
And Lawnmower Man, he's a big fan.
Oh. Unfortunately, I've seen both of them and in the theaters. The first one was very well done. Was that the one where it shows like the hell pits and the chambers? And
I think that was number two.
Number two. Because the second one scared the crap out of me.
Well, this one, I mean, I like the way that Doug Bradley played Pinhead. Ryan, I don't know if you even paying attention to what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. But so now this one's coming out. Question mark. We're not so sure. It's in the rumor train that it's going to be coming out. But there is also going to be in between the last Hellraiser and this one, they're doing Hellraiser X. Hey, Judgment.
Question real quick.
Coming out in 2017, it does not have Clive Barker doing it, and it does not have Doug Bradley.
So question. On the new reboot, do you think that's going to be a theatrical release or straight to DVD?
Yeah, I think that one's going to be a theatrical because they're...
Yeah, I think it's the right time that if you're going to do the big release, you can do it now in the next couple, three years.
So this is like 20 years after the fact. Let's do a fresh slate.
I think it's actually billed to be 25 years after the last one.
After the original?
Sorry, excuse me. 27 years after the incident with Frank and Julia in the cotton home. So it's like, it's picking up after the last, I would say, Clive Barker point, not the horrible remakes that were kind of thrown out.
I wonder which movies would that be after, the first, second, or third one?
I believe it's after, let me pull up the name. Oh, geez, that would be, where to go.
It's interesting.
Hellraiser Deader, I think, was the last one.
Because
the last one, Ryan? 2009, I think.
Not see the last couple of them.
So Hellraiser Deader was in 2009, and that is, I believe, the last one of Clive Barker's.
Is that grammatically correct?
So I don't give a crap right now. It's a horror film. They don't really care about.
I think it's interesting. We're getting some interesting remakes coming up. I know. Kind of stealing movie news. I know allegedly Bloodsport remake is actually going to be for theatrical release, and Van Damme is supposed to play the teacher role.
Yeah, I heard Van Damme was coming back in some of this stuff, and
I don't think he's actually had a theatrical release, at least in the States.
Yeah.
I think the last one was The Quest.
You mean Time Cop wasn't a theatrical release?
No, it actually was. I saw that.
I know. I was going to say that one is.
I think it was Time Cop or The Quest. I think it was his last actual really big, starring role.
Wait, I thought Double Impact.
When he was still doing, you know, high that kicks was, and shit.
Was that after
Double Impact? It was somewhere along the lines.
That he did with the glamour basketball player. What's his name?
Dennis Rodman.
Thank you, Dennis.
I don't think that was a theatrical release. I could be wrong.
I think that was. Ryan, do you remember?
No.
Because I could do without The Bad As You Wanna Be. That's, by the way, that's Dennis Rodman's self-titled memoir. If anybody wanna read something that's unreadable. I don't know. I think it's interesting that they're like remaking and rebooting. Generally I'm against that, but Hellraiser, if they do the right movie, I think it's about time. What do you think?
I think this one would be the right time because, I mean, you have, our audience age of people that kind of grew up watching the horror films of that genre. And, I mean, there's really hasn't been a good classical story of a horror film on Hellraiser's type of par for a very, very, very long time, at least 2016, so at least 16 years that I know of. Cabin in the Woods, which we did a while back, was fun and stuff, but
almost
wasn't
kind of making fun of these kinds of movies.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's making fun of all these, and then we have some of the ones that, help me write it, there's one that came out of we have the Rob Zombies that came out. Those were pretty good.
Basically,
but
after shit like Batman Begins, you know, everyone wants to see sort of like all the realistic kind of versions of these things. So you very rarely see, you know, like these, you know, at least big tentpole versions of like the mystical sort of hell raising kind of movies, you know, big pits of hell and crazy demons and just nutty shit that's in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, like on one of the Hellraisers, a DJ gets a CD thrown through his neck, and later on he becomes a CD-throwing demon. This is a little...
Yeah.
I do like the new kind of gritty-realistic Batman Begins movies. Is, you know, can you say grounding movies in reality, if that's actually a thing? I like that enough that I think it's giving some movies back their edge. Like, horror movies in general seemed, at least in the 90s, got to the point they were comic booky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I blame Mythbusters, basically. You know, like here's a couple of dudes who basically spent their formative years, you know, making these explosions and crazy things for movies.
Yeah.
And then spent the rest of the time basically showing you how much bullshit it all was, which is great. It made people a little more, you know, susceptible to critical thinking.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like now we watch a movie and we're like, okay, bullshit. I can see the wire. You know what I mean? Constantly calling out the little flaws. So
see, I kind of like that, though.
The writers, they had to rise to the challenge. You know?
Yeah. I see. I think it's about time. It's kind of like this is a semi-poor example, but like wrestling, like WWE type of wrestling.
Yeah.
Back in the day, there was something called kayfabe, where some people knew that it was fake, but not everybody.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's actually wrestlers who were stabbed to death, you know, and crowds like actually killing people, and nobody knew it was real. And now that everybody kind of knows it's fake because of what Vince McMahon said in a 90s trial, that now they have to rise to the occasion of better stories, better.
Yeah.
And I think it's about time that the movie industry at least is thrown on their heels a little bit.
But that's why they're doing all the reboots.
We all just kind of know too much now. It's cool.
I think the reboot thing.
The cube.
Ooh, that one was interesting. as long as you stay away from Resident Evil, there's enough of them. Please. I actually.
Mila Jovovich retire.
Oh, poor Lilu. I think if they chose the right movies to reboot, I'm kind of reversing my stance a little bit. Like they actually should have just let Ghostbusters die. You know, there's. That thing, I think, is definitely an 80s thing.
Yeah.
But Hellraiser and certain other movies, I'm actually for, because I think they could reach a new generation and then spark better movies. Excuse me.
Well, not to mention, you know, with somebody like Clive Barker's imagination, I mean, we owe it to him to see what he can do when your imagination is no longer limited by the prop guy or by visual effects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, also, that Clive Barker, Stephen King, those guys must have creepy fucking dreams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're up to Ryan's Picaroonie.
Yeah, Picaroonie.
Okay.
I'm torturing
you. Every now and again, no matter how many movies we sort of have watched over the years, there's always going to be gaps. And once I say this movie that I have not seen ever, you guys are going to, like, kick me off this show because I don't deserve to be fucking reviewing movies having not seen this, but it was kind of before my time and just never got around to it, so I'm gonna make you guys watch it with me. Blade Runner.
I hate you.
Well, so dude, ladies and gentlemen,
that ain't even cool, man. Are you serious?
Yeah, dead serious. I've never seen the movie. I gotta watch it eventually.
So which version? Just the straight theatrical release?
Yeah,
because there's like three or four different versions.
I mean, what is there like a contention between director's cut and theatrical?
Yeah, there's some variants. One has, if I remember, like voiceover. One doesn't. So just like theatrical release.
What's the crowd consensus? What is the internet pick?
That's actually something I couldn't tell you. So I say what we should do is do the theatrical release.
I mean, yeah, let's go with what people would have originally seen there.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you guys know this or not. I'm not sure if we'd let this on air. Blade Runner was actually a movie that at least James and I were not a big fan of. So when we started this show, that was actually semi on the forbidden list, even though we knew one of us were going to pick it. I was actually going to pick it eventually. So this will be interesting to see what he thinks. Because I know what I think. And, well, you're going to have to wait for next week. And do we have a TV show for next week?
Yeah, we do. Bosch. BOSCH. Bosch.
Okay. And so I gave the Candyman a 3 out of 5. James gave it a 3 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 3 out of 5. Next week is the TV show Bosch.
Yeah. Bosch. Well, I have to watch the TV show to see how it's pronounced, but I think it's Bosch, Bosch, whatever.
And as always, thank you for watching. We'll be right back.